You're very welcome back to the Greg Hughes podcast. 40 years have passed since a single night changed the O'Donnell family forever. In April 1986, an accidental fire at their home claimed the lives of four children, Sharon, Joanne, Adrian and baby Kevin, as well as their babysitter Noreen O'Donnell, who died trying to save them. While four decades have gone by, the impact of that loss remains a central part of the O'Donnell story. Today I'm joined by Angela O'Donnell, also known as Angela 90, and her son Philip. He was just 13 when he and his brothers Patrick and Joe escaped the blaze. We're here to talk about that night, the memories of those they lost, and how they've navigated the 40 years that followed. Okay, so as I mentioned, my guests on the podcast this week are Angela O'Donnell. You might know her as Angela 90, and her son Philip. Both of you, thank you so much for calling in and joining us.
You're welcome.
And Philip, take us back to that fateful night 40-odd years ago, because your memory of it's incredibly vivid, and I think I've spoken to you before, and you were able to recount it just as if it were yesterday.
Well, I suppose the night before we were all in the house as normal on a Saturday, on a Friday night, you know, Saturday morning, I was woke with my father, you know, and I was asked to go to the garage and get fire extinguishers or get a hose or get whatever, you know, and pulled on a pair of trousers and a shirt and went out the door on my bare feet and ran round the back. And, you know, the next thing, you know, the fire had taken hold at that stage. My father was on the roof, on the flat roof at the back of the house. And there were two other young boys from the area, you know, Malik and Ian, Shawnee Floyd up there along with them, you know, and we were shouting and roaring at them to come down. And, you know, at that stage, the ambulance or the fire crews had started to arrive, you know, and that's what it was, you know.
And you were just a cub, just 13 years of age.
14.
14. And four siblings of yours passed away that day. Sharon, Joanne, Adrian, and baby Kevin.
Yeah. And then Noreen, the babysitter as well.
Noreen, you know, O'Donnell, who was just 25 at the time. Absolutely unbelievable. And we'll come back to more from that night. But Angela, how have you coped? How do you cope with something like that in the first instance? When did you learn that such a tragedy was unfolding?
Nearly straight away. By the time we got down and out, we wanted to go. I wanted to go back in again. They wouldn't let me there. Actually, the fire chief was picking up one of our neighbours, Dan McMinnum, God of mercy on him, to go golfing, and he pulled me back and he said, "No, you can't. You can't go back in again." Mm-hmm. But we more or less knew then straight away that the four children and Noreen were gone.
Which is unbelievable. I mean, we're not geared for anything close to dealing with something like that, are we?
You're not geared for it, and you don't know how to cope with it straight away. You learn to live with it, but it's not easy.
And Noreen wasn't just a victim, though. She was a hero as well.
Very, very close friend.
But she was a hero as well, too.
She certainly was. She certainly was.
Yeah. But you feel that loss as personally,
absolutely,
too.
Absolutely. Well, you know, then you had to worry about her parents and going to tell them that they'd lost their beautiful daughter, which was very hard on them as well. Their loss mightn't have been as big, but everybody's, doesn't matter whether you lose one child or four children, the loss is, you never really get over the loss of a child.
No, you cope. How did you cope in those early
Well, I suppose we had a lot of very, we had a lot of very good people and family around us, and in particular, I would have to say, Bishop Hegarty brought us through a terrible lot. But we had very good friends and, that stood by us, and it's not that we talked a lot about them. We didn't. We didn't sort of say, well, they're gone and that's it. We're going to forget about them. We talk about them all the time. I look at their picture and I talk to them and I tell them what's going on. And, you know, we have a big picture of them all because Philip and Joanne made their confirmation 2 weeks beforehand.
Yeah.
So we had a big family portrait taken that day. And
do you see that as a blessing in a way, that you have that photo?
Yeah, of them as they were then. Now you try to imagine what might have been or how would they be, especially when you see their friends.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're married and they have their children. And you wonder what,
and
what might
when,
have been.
When you do imagine those situations, is it in sadness or do you give yourself a smile maybe, imagining one of your daughters walking down the aisle, or is it just pure grief, or how
no,
do you...
No, it's a mixture.
Yeah.
It's a mixture, you know, that you don't begrudge their friends what they have, but you think what you might have had, you know, but that's life.
It was an incredible loss of life in one go, and thankfully things have moved on a little bit, and I'm thinking more recently, say, for instance, of the Chrysler tragedy in which 10 people lost their lives. But every arm of the state, I mean, listen, there were things that could have been done better, but, you know, there was so much support put in place, counselling, efforts to support the community. Back then,
nothing.
There was nothing. It was just literally, that's an awful
tragedy. We went to England after that, and the college that Patrick went to, our son Patrick went to, then couldn't understand why we never had any counselling, why there was no counselling. But that was a different time.
But you probably weren't looking for it either, because, you know, how could you figure that out in your situation? Like, you're not going, you know, where's the state? Maybe you were, Angela.
Well, I was angry because there was no water.
Yeah.
We didn't have any water in Ardidonnell. When they turned on the hoses in Lower Ardidonnell, there came nothing out of the money muck. That made me angry because I had campaigned for water.
At that time?
Most days or most nights, we never had water in Ardidonnell at that time.
Did you ever consider, though, what would happen in the case of an emergency? Like, when you were campaigning, were you
Absolutely.
Thinking... You really did?
Absolutely. I still worry about that with schools and...
Well, Philip, it's not that long ago that me and you were speaking, and I thought you spoke very bravely at that time, but it was in the context of, you know, the tools that the fire service need when they need them. So we were probably at that time 36, 37, maybe 38 years on. And here we were, you were doing the same or saying the same kind of stuff that your mum was saying prior to this awful tragedy.
You know, but, you know, as my mother said, when that morning when they turned on the hydrants, and it wasn't just in Ardidonnell, you know, they turned on a hydrant, and there was a priest actually watched them turn on a hydrant at Dunn Stores in Letterkenny, at the old Dunn Stores now, and nothing but sludge came out. And they were going to try and pump water from Lower Main Street to Ardidonnell. You know, and firemen go out every day, and they do a marvellous job. And all them resources should be given to them. But also, that's a terrible burden to put on a fireman.
Yeah.
That when he turns on a hydrant, that he hasn't got the tools to do his job.
Did you ever speak to any of the fire service in the wake of the incident? And because, I mean, they went through a very traumatic time as well.
Did.
But were they conscious of the issues in terms of the infrastructure?
Well, down to, look, all the firemen are all local, and every one of them, you know, knew mum and dad and us all. And down through the years, I would have spoken to most of them that would have been at the at the scene that day.
Mm.
You know, and one of them broke down along with me a few, around the time of that campaign, and I had already been told this story by somebody else.
Yeah.
And he broke down and had a conversation with me about it, you know, and that man carried that for 30 odd years.
Yeah, because, I mean, just in the week that we're recording this podcast, you know, we were welcoming an announcement of 3.5 million for a new fire station in Finnair for Ballyshannon, Bundoran, surrounding areas. And that's great. Brilliant. But if you've nowhere to, if you can't find where the access to the water is, or when you do find it, sludge comes out or nothing comes out, well, sure, that 3.5 million, what's it for?
Hmm. Well,
Paddy, you know, young Paddy Doherty, from the back road, Paddy left the fire service after that, after our fire.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
He'd seen
and enough. He joined them. Paddy's a great guy. He really is a great guy. And he joined the ambulance. He's now retired. I was talking to his wife actually yesterday, and Paddy's retired now. But it took an that took an awful lot out of Paddy.
Mm.
I do believe it did.
Yeah, for sure. I think anyone that's at the scene of something like that, you take something with you, or you leave something behind, or whatever it is for the person.
You know, as I say, at the time when we spoke last year or the year before, there has been some changes.
Yeah, but it came up in the council meeting not long after our conversation.
There has been some changes, but there has also been a change now. We have some of the older guys have retired, and there's some new blood on there now, and I have spoken to Michael Scott, and Michael is very proactive, and you know, at least he's willing to talk to people. He's willing to meet people. He's willing to answer emails.
Yeah.
You know, and that's all very important, you know.
And you know, what I think really is important for us to remember in situations like this, especially, you know, your situation, and Angela, I'll put this to you, you know, nothing can undo what was done.
No.
All you can try and do, and this is what I think is amazing about people, is try and best ensure this could never happen to somebody else.
Yeah. I worry sometimes if a fire broke out in the schools or the hospital, have they got the right equipment? Have they got the height? Have they got everything?
They've got the pressure.
You know, the water pressure. To douse that nobody's injured or nobody's hurt. Because I wouldn't want anybody to go through what a parent goes through when they lose a child.
This is completely obviously reframed your life as well.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. You know.
There's no special time of the year that's joyful or right anymore.
Mm.
Like Christmas, Easter, birthdays. There's always somebody missing.
Yeah. And always a reminder, not that you could ever forget.
No.
And it's the birthdays, but it's the anniversaries and special occasions that never happened.
You'd be prepared for birthdays.
Yeah.
Be prepared for Christmas. And
well, I want to ask you specifically.
Certain times of the year.
Yeah, Philip, I want to ask you specifically, because obviously, you know, Angela's experience is as a parent, having carried the children, birth them, raise them, continue to do. But you're there as a young 14-year-old, 13, 14-year-old at the time. It was all hands on deck, right? Yeah. And you've got that trauma, but you've also got that loss. You've lost out on, you know, so much too, right? I'm not trying to push the emotional buttons here, but it's unimaginable, and I'm explaining it just as I'm thinking about it. You know, what did that mean for your teenage years and into your adult life?
It changed them.
Yeah.
You know, I went from a fairly carefree 14-year-old to somebody that had to take on responsibility. It wasn't imposed on me or anything like that, but I felt I had to protect my mother and father. And
well, you're Patrick and Joe's older brother too, weren't you?
Two younger brothers and stuff. And I didn't get it right. I got it wrong some of the times. Some of the times I got it right.
Well, Patrick never spoke.
No, Patrick doesn't speak.
Patrick has never mentioned their name since they died. Now, he sometimes go missing on a Sunday, used to, and he'd sit in where I was down at the grave, end of story.
He'll just he's doing it his way.
No conversation, but he never speaks their name, never.
That's remarkable, and he was just 8 at the time.
Yeah.
And that's just his way of, you've fit to accept that.
That's, yeah. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Philip, you were a chatter though, did you find talking it through or?
It took a while. You know,
Survivor's guilt, was that a factor? Why?
All
did,
back time, back
yeah,
time.
Talk to me about that.
Well, I suppose with 40 years now of 2020 hindsight, that's very easy to sit and pinpoint a lot of stuff. I wouldn't have talked about it at the start. Then, as time went on, you had to do something, you know. I used drink for a while.
Mm.
Until I didn't use drink, you know. And, you know, I would still have friends who would say to me, you didn't drink too much, you know. But it wasn't the drink that they seen. It wasn't the madness that they seen, you know. It was...
But you were medicating.
I was, absolutely. Yeah.
Happened to be drinking.
It just happened to be drinking. It could have been anything else. And you know, like my mother said, there... You know, when I looked for help and went to stop drinking, there was people putting me away the same way as there were people putting our ways when the fire happened, you know, and
but sure, the people would be going, sure, look at Philip, look what he went through.
Yeah, I drank a lot in that.
Yeah.
Poor me, and look what happened to me, and that, you know, but and it was only after my own son was born that I really had to sit down and do a lot of work on myself.
Yeah.
And go and seek help. And
was that because you felt there was sort of a greater purpose? Do you know, I think having kids can do that for you. It's not, you don't just think about yourself anymore. Did you sort of have to step out of yourself?
I realised sitting in the hospital with, you know, and I was off a drink a couple of years at the time, but I realised sitting in the hospital with this baby in a basket in front of me that, oh my God, you know, I'm now responsible for this for this person, and I have got to do everything to protect him. And it was only then I realised, really, you know, what my mother and father must have went through.
Mm.
You know, and it was a long road. It's still a journey, you know. And as I say,
but it's also, as I says it about Angela, it's also fashioned who you are. It's not something that you go, that was 40 years ago. Yeah. You're a different, we don't know what's different about you, but clearly you're going to be a different person now than you were then.
Yeah, you know.
And what was the circumstances? What, and if this is too difficult to talk about, or we don't know, or you don't think it's even relevant, but what are the circumstances? Did you ever figure out, like, how some of you got out and some of you didn't, or?
It was organised chaos.
Yeah.
Well, we were downstairs.
Oh, well, that's the difference, isn't it?
You know,
and the smoke rises.
They were, there was, the baby was in our room, and Sharon came in early morning and took the baby out. She took Kevin out into their room.
Yes.
So Joanne and Kevin and Adrian, and they were all in one room at the back of the house.
Right, okay.
And it was like, it started downstairs, but there was, if you can imagine, like a chimney breast and then two alcoves.
Yes.
And apparently that's, the smoke went up.
Just followed through that path and straight in. Yeah.
Straight up. You know, started in that end of the house.
Yeah. It was.
But Patrick took Joseph out.
He did. Yes.
He was at life saving and down in the pool. And he realised if he got down below the smoke.
Now Patrick was only 8.
Yeah.
I mean, so what a presence of mind.
And Joseph was
5.
Four or five,
yeah.
And Patrick realised if he got down, he could take Joseph out and Joseph held on to his feet and they crawled out.
Mm.
Now, they were in a house across the road with Josie and Eileen Gallagher. We didn't even know they were there. We thought they were gone too at one stage. And then we realised, no, the two boys are okay.
I remember, you know, I remember after some time, and I don't know whether it was 20 minutes or 2 hours or whatever, but I remember going over to Danny and Mary McGlynn's, and my mother was in the kitchen along with City and a whole load of ones around her trying to console her or whatever. My father was on the phone to, I think it was my grandfather.
Yeah.
You know, and I came in and he looked at me, and it was, things were bad.
Yeah. You
know, things were, and there was, there was no light.
Yeah,
there were very little light, and he said to me, he says, what's happening? And I said, I don't know. And he says, you know, and who's out? And I said, Paddy's and Josie and Eileen Gallagher's along with Jojo.
Mm.
And the whole expression on his face changed.
Yeah.
Because there now was hope that maybe there was somebody else out.
Yeah.
Maybe there was somebody else. And he said to me, get them. Go get them.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, and as things, as that day unfolded, like it was amazing. Like, and as I say, I don't know whether it was at an hour or 2 hours. I was still walking about in my bare feet. The madness of the whole thing. And I remember we were there. We were in McGlynn's for a while, and everybody started the day away.
You know, we went City. I've been friends with City and Sean Doherty for 50 years nearly. So City said, come on, you're all coming to my house. So that's where we were. We stayed with City and Sean for over a week at that time.
How soon were the funerals then?
Too soon.
Yeah.
I wouldn't recommend anybody to have bury a child as quick as we buried ours. That was Saturday morning.
It was the way, but...
That was the way. That was...
So the fire was...
The funeral was Monday morning.
Wow.
And it was... Looking back now, anybody that loses a child, I do say to them,
why is keep that, it though, for a day. Angela? Is it because the time that you can spend with them?
Well, we never got a chance to see them again, but maybe that... I don't know why that was at the time. I ended up in hospital, I think, on the Saturday... the Sunday evening.
Yeah.
For a couple of hours. And then the funeral was... Or did I get...
Whatever the time frame is, this tragedy happened early Saturday.
Yeah.
The kids were buried... And Noreen might have been buried soon thereafter. They were buried Monday.
Yeah.
If there was a hospital stay in there at all, it's a very narrow window.
Yeah.
Probably with no sleep or any way to sort of try and get your head around it.
No.
So and the one thing we've learned we learned through the pandemic too, there's a process, a grieving process, and to be present in that time between someone's passing and their burial is very important to understanding that they've gone.
Yeah, I would recommend anybody that loses a child to sit back for a day and...
Do nothing.
Take it on.
Yeah.
And try and come to terms a wee bit with it.
I'm not talking about your family or all close friends. It's not negative against anyone, but did you get a sense afterwards that people almost avoided you because they might not know what to say?
Yeah.
Talk to me a bit about that, Angela.
People used to cross, you know, you'd maybe be down the town and they would cross to the other side of the street.
And you'd see it.
And But I knew they didn't know what to say.
Yeah.
And really, you still go to wakes and you say, I'm sorry for your trouble, but or I'm sorry for your loss or whatever. But it's words. And when I suppose when you lost four children in one go, people are really don't know what to say to you to try to comfort you.
But there is no words.
There is no
words.
That's
why we go, sorry for your loss.
Yeah, there is no words it kind to of, say. Yeah.
It gets you away.
Yeah, yeah.
You can feel it in your chest, what you want to say, but you can't articulate it. Now, how can you tell a mum?
Yeah, yeah.
There's no words there's of encouragement no words. Or no, comfort.
No, there's no words.
I mean, again, as if it's appropriate or not, I'm sorry if it isn't, but how did your husband deal with it?
Well, I suppose Joe being a recovering alcoholic, Joe's been watched 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
In case, and I would have to say that Tim Kelly and the Gardaí were excellent.
Mm.
Now, on the morning of the fire, a neighbour came out with a bottle of whiskey and she said, take a swig of that. Now, thankfully to God, he didn't take it and never took it.
Isn't it amazing the little insights that we think we're doing the right thing? And
to this day, he's never broken. Over 53 years sober and he's never
fair play to him.
Broke it. But Joe would have a good day and I would have a bad day.
Yeah.
There was never any continuity, and you know, the two of us were bad, or I was bad and he would be good. And he sort of carried me that day and I carried him the day he was down. You know, that went on for, it's still in a way maybe carries on a bit.
But just
it's not as intense as it was, but
we were blessed. Our house is like a train station. Our house was always like a train station.
Yeah.
And my father, you know, there was that many people coming and going. You know, and there were people there in the morning at 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
Joe loves company. He really does. He enjoys company.
There would be people still calling at 11 o'clock.
Yeah.
And it didn't matter whether it was 10 o'clock in the morning or...
The
door was always open.
Yeah.
No one's invited, but everyone's welcome.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and I suppose, you know, Daddy had a lot of friends, a lot of good friends.
Yeah.
You know, I would be afraid to start mentioning names.
For those that you'd leave out.
For those I would leave out.
So we'll leave it at, you know who yous are.
Absolutely. As I said in the beginning, our friends and our family were so supportive and so good to us every way they could, and
you know, not just with Mama and Daddy, you know, Mama and Daddy's friends would have maybe appeared and said, come on, you with me, and took Patrick away for the day, or took Joseph away for the day, or took me away for the day.
And I would say even well into your adult life, even whether you know it or not, they were probably still keeping an eye on you.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
That's the community,
you know,
isn't it?
Well, that's what we used to say to the boys when they were going out, you better behave yourself now, because
everyone's watching.
And they were.
Keep them lying,
You know, no matter what, I said, don't be getting into trouble up the town, because if Daddy hears that, there'll be a million murder in this house if you're up. The town must behave. And
did he ever hear word?
Sometimes.
You referenced the importance of Bishop Hegarty, and I know Reverend Smeaton, Reverend McCormick were also influential. Were you a religious person at that time, and was it religion that was helping you, or was it just them being so kind? Any God that loves me would never do this to me. I'm not sure if you went through that, but I mean, it would be understandable if you did.
Yeah, well, I suppose I was religious, all right, but that's the way I was brought up. It was just Bishop Hegarty always seemed to arrive at the right time.
Right.
You know, he would either be passing, going somewhere, or I remember one time we were down in the mobile home in Downings and he arrived down. And it was one of the anniversaries.
Funny,
Come on, we're going out for dinner. Oh, you know, it was just... he always seemed to know when to arrive at the right time. And his door was open to us 24 hours a day.
You rebuilt the house, and everyone's different, and there's no right or wrong. Some people would go, never go near that place again. But you raised these kids there. This is where the memories were. This is home. Was it ever in doubt that you would rebuild and move back in?
In the beginning, the first couple of weeks, we thought, well, will we or will we not rebuild it? How could we get the kids to school without going near Ardonagh, and how could we manoeuvre, you know, whatever way? But the house was rebuilt. The donations just started coming in, and the house was rebuilt. And but after a couple of, about a few years afterwards, when the boys were all starting to work and go away in the morning, and Joe was away in the morning, I was there kind of all day on my own. I couldn't stay in it on my own.
Why?
Just when I went up to do the beds, and I just could visualise it.
Just a bigger reminder.
Exactly as it was, even though it was different.
Yeah.
It was turned around a bit, but I could still visualise it the way it was. And then this house out at opposite Lake Graveyard came on the market, and we decided maybe we would buy it. And then people said, oh, you're going out to Lake, you're going away into the country. I said, no, I'm not.
That's Letterkenny way looking you at know, it. Lake's the country.
You're
okay.
going out to the country. I said, no, I'm not. But how will you cope with the graveyard? I said, sure. When I'm in Ardonagh, I'm looking over at the graveyard.
Yeah.
Where I'm going, I'm still looking over at it.
Sometimes I think we say things without necessarily thinking them through, because it's not very logical. But it's meant with love.
People said to them, oh, you need to go away somewhere and forget it.
No.
You can't forget. How could you forget?
What was it like for you back in the house, Philip?
It was different.
I think kids... And I know you were a teenager, and I know you had to grow up very quick, but we do think a little bit different when we're teenage, how we can cope, because if you look in the you can just see that kids can adapt and cope in different ways. Is that what you think you did?
I probably did. I probably ran away a good bit of the time.
Yeah.
You know, I remember, you know, the following summer going to work at 15 years of age at the Great Northern Hotel in Mundoran.
Right. You really moved to the country.
I really moved to the country. Well, if you listen to some of the people in Mundoran, Mundoran's the centre of the universe.
For sure.
And you know, I left there and went to England.
Did you feel there was pressure on you to fill a gap? And I don't mean that badly, but I'm thinking, like, you know...
The pressure, any of the pressure I felt, it was pressure from myself.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't from my mother and father.
No, of course, 100%. But
there was pressure there to and I don't know what the pressure was, you know, if you were to ask
me. Well, it's trauma, though. I mean, absolutely. You were traumatised, because it's not like you were in Australia and you got a phone call and someone said to you, this has happened. That would be terrible as it is. Yeah. But you were there expecting all of a sudden, you were expected to be a man to help, to try and douse these flames, even when it was an impossible task, and to stand there and witness it. And that conversation you related about the hope and like, that's for a young mind, to be honest with you, to be who you are now and to be who you've been in your life, whether you went to Bundoran or England, I mean, you have to be incredibly proud of yourself.
Well, I suppose the other part about being away from Letterkenny, there was a lot of anonymity. You know, nobody knew who I was. All right, you know, London, definitely nobody knew who I was. You know, you could be yourself.
Mentioned the fundraising for the house. Just to talk a little bit about the Letterkenny community, either of the two of you or both of you, and how they rallied at that time.
Rallied wouldn't be the word.
Because I presume that literally just whatever you had on your back was all that was left, really, effectively.
Well,
starting from scratch.
Within an hour, I would say, or 2 hours anyway, of the fair, we had all the material things that we needed. We had clothes, we had shoes, we had everything we needed.
By the time we had got from Ardonagh
to cities
to Cairnamugga, to City Doherty's house, everybody was, you know, and people just kept coming, you know, and there was stuff arrived that morning, you know. There's my mother's a piece of glass she keeps on her dressing table, and I keep telling everybody this story about it. But it's footprints. It's a round, curved piece of glass with the footprints prayer on it.
Yeah.
And it's one of the things that sticks out of that morning, you know, and my father was walking about asking everybody, where did this prayer come out of?
Yeah.
You know, because the line in it, you know, why is it when I was at my lowest, there's only one set of footprints.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when you carried me.
But the funny thing about that piece of glass, it has fallen so many times, but
there.
It has never broken.
And no one knows where it comes from, you're saying?
Nobody knew where it came from.
No.
But it's there.
Yeah. And it has fallen and fallen and fallen, and it has never broke.
And that feels like a sign of significance or something. Do you get that a lot at all, Angela? Do you
feel when I talk to the kids, when I look at their picture and I talk to them, I really do believe they're with me.
But why aren't they? Why wouldn't they be?
Yeah.
You know, we don't understand anything. And we think we do, but we know nothing.
No. And you know, I have a different slant on the Chrysler Memorial to a lot of people.
You know, I was actually going to ask you about that. So I'm very interested that you've decided to speak about that.
The place where those 10 people died was the hub of Chrysler.
The community.
Yeah. And make no mistake about it, in years to come, people will forget. People do, they have their own lives, they're entitled.
The wider public, you mean. Yeah.
They will forget. But to me, I think that's where the shop, the post office, that was there, and the hairdresser should be rebuilt there.
On that site?
On the site, with a beautiful memoriam, with their names, well kept, that as young people, as grannies are taking them in to get their pension or whatever at the post office or their stamps, they can tell the young people that's where those people died.
Mm.
So we'll go over and say a wee prayer.
Okay.
But if they build a memorial somewhere else, a garden or something, it'll become a drinking den eventually.
I know what you're saying.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Like the market yard or the market square or something.
That's a place where they can always be remembered.
Is your point now, if you go to the graves of the children, or are you facilitated if you need to go back to the house, or do you ever have to go back to the house, or do you close that off, either of the two of you? In your mind, sorry, I mean.
No, I'm a bit selfish when I go to the graveyard. I like to be in the graveyard on my own.
Yeah, that's all right.
I certainly don't like Cemetery Sunday. I think it's too big for me. It's too... maybe it's my selfishness on my part.
Or maybe you want some peace and quiet to
talk
just, to your kids.
Yeah. Because I do talk.
Yeah,
and I'm sure there are people passing at times and they think,
I don't think they do.
Looked. And I'm standing there talking to, you know, telling Sharon the crack and all that. Telling her what's going on.
Someone explained to me that, because I wouldn't be a big graveyard person, but someone explained to me for those that it's important, like you will never be closer to that person in that moment than anywhere else.
They say they know that you're there as well.
What about you, you know, Philip? Are you a graveyard visitor?
I don't go.
Because there's no, I don't think there's no
Joe's
right or
not
wrong.
A graveyard
it's
person.
Very individual. So it's the hobby.
No.
Yeah.
He can't cope with it.
I would have no fixed time. It wouldn't be something that I would think I'd have to go every Sunday or every week, or maybe not every month. I could go three times in the 1 week.
Yes.
You know. But But I go there often. And, I would talk to them. I could be driving down the road in the car, and a song will come on the radio.
Mm.
Something, and that's the days that you don't, that you're not prepared for.
Yeah.
A song comes on the radio.
That's the wave, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, like Last Christmas or something from Wham or something from that, and you go, my God.
Because smell, sound.
You know.
Well, it was like Sharon the night before the fire, when she was going to bed. We had a glass door between the hall and the sitting room. And she came to the glass door and she put her face in and she says, don't waken me early in the morning.
Mm.
You know.
Yeah.
You know, that Saturday morning, there was a couple of changes that Saturday morning, because up until that Saturday, our phone number changed in our house.
Yeah.
Because my father had buses and taxis, but he had sold them off to another
fella.
So
he didn't want to be getting calls?
Well, the phone, this was, you know, and it was a funny Friday night, because normally our Friday nights was mad. We would have been out collecting the school bus money. And that was the first Friday night we hadn't been out as a whole family going around the estates collecting the money. We had time to come in and sit down. Comic Relief, Lenny Henry and Comic Relief was on the TV. You know what, and the next Saturday, the next day was basically, it was a new chapter. You know, my father had made the decision that he had fed up being a bus driver and been away from us 7 days a week.
Tough work.
You know, we had the video shops and he was concentrating on that. And, you know, everybody had made plans for that Saturday. But them plans were all changed, you know. Somebody had a different plan for them Saturdays that we didn't know anything about.
Yeah.
That's unbelievable. Can we talk a wee bit about Noreen O'Donnell, who I know is an incredibly important part of your memories? She was a family friend. She was so brave in trying to rescue the kids.
Yeah.
Like you.
Yeah.
Angela, wanting to go in yourself. What do you want to say about Noreen?
Well, Noreen came. Noreen worked in the health board, and we got very friendly with Noreen, and the two girls, Sharon and Joanne especially, got very friendly with Noreen. And Noreen used to come at the weekends, and her and the two girls would do things together, and you know, they were at an age they were getting into makeup and whatnot. And they would sit up in the bedroom trying on makeup and what do you think of this, and, you know.
Brilliant.
And Noreen just was a very special girl. She was a lovely, lovely girl. And she, as I say, she came every weekend, and she loved the two wee boys. She had them destroyed. But she just loved the children, and it was so strange that she had to lose her life with them.
Unbelievable. God bless her.
You know,
God,
but she was, Noreen was a great girl. She really was.
Now, depending on when people listening to this, if you're listening to this very soon after we release it, the 26th of April 2026, isn't it? It's a very important date. It's the 40th anniversary. Well, there's a 40th anniversary musical tribute in St. Eunan's Cathedral at 3 p.m. So whose idea was this? Because this can work two ways, both ways at the same time. It's fantastic to have something to focus on, to build up to remember. But also, it's reminder as to why it has to happen in the first place. So how did you come up with this idea?
Over the years, nothing was ever done.
Yeah.
You know, and we were always fairly private on how we marked the anniversary. And I suppose over the last maybe 12, 18 months, I was trying to figure out how or what could we do. And
what would be appropriate?
And what would be appropriate? Yeah. Where would we do it? Mm. I started to speak to a couple of different people and started to bounce things about. And And up to speak to Father Gillespie. And I mentioned to him what I was thinking about it, and would the cathedral be available? And he said, yes. No hesitation, yes. So then I says, right, now that we have a venue, what are we going to do, Father? And so myself and Doreen Sheridan had a chat, and then we got talking to Pascal Blake and got Pascal involved, and I'd already been speaking to Al McAvenagh, the principal and school of Warragon Smile, who was also a neighbour of ours in Ardonagh, and everywhere I went they suggested, oh, speak to Bridgen Carr or speak to Anne Nichols, and the whole lot of us met in the Mount Errigal about 6 months ago, and this is what we came up with.
Brilliant. And it wasn't
that we came up with it. We sat down and we said, right, here's the date, here's what we're doing. We'll do this. And it came together very, very organically. It spoke to Margot and Shuni Cramshay and Alec Black and Sinead and Sulla. And I think actually I spoke to Sulla first, and then I spoke to Shuni or Alec and Shuni.
It's a brilliant lineup. Margot, Shuni Cramshay, the Blacks, Alex.
Well, everybody there has done something or has meant something or. All the choirs are coming together.
That's right. JoJo O'Donnell, his daughter Kyra, are performing. Rory Gallagher, joined by the collection of local choirs, as you mentioned, with Father Michael Carney on the organ. And there's a collection on the day in aid of the Cathedral Painting Fund. Were you surprised? And I'm not saying it didn't happen without effort. How it has come together, though, because it's turned into something really quite remarkable now, especially, I think, with the collaborations and
everybody that I spoke to about it. Everybody that we had spoke to about it was, what can I do?
Mm.
There was no barriers was put up by anybody.
Yeah.
And it wasn't about a fundraiser. It wasn't about raising money. It was about remembering.
Yeah.
But it was also about hope and about life.
Mm.
It's as much about our lives.
And celebrating
40 years.
Yeah. What's your feelings, Angela? Because we know already, okay, that you want things nice and quiet for your own little chats. And I presume there's going to be, you know, different levels of enthusiasm.
Well, when it was muted first, I thought, no, I don't think that's the right thing. But as it went on, and then we had a meeting then in our house. They were meeting in the Mount Errigal, and I knew very little about it. But then we had a meeting in our house one night, and I thought, well, these girls are putting an awful lot of effort into this.
Yeah.
And they assured me that everything was being done sort of, you know, with reverence and with the way it should be for the cathedral, and that everything would work out perfect. And it seems to be going that way.
Well, listen, it sounds like it's going to be a wonderful way to remember. And when you put something together like this and it's done so sensitively and given the venue, people in the audience or people who are attending are doing it for different reasons as well. You know, maybe they're remembering their own person
or whatever
it is.
Well, we have family coming from Scotland and we have family coming from America.
Which would never happen without something like this. It's very hard to get everybody together,
isn't it? Well, my brother-in-law in America, when he heard about it, he said, now, bear in mind, this man will be 90 in June.
Wow, okay.
And he said, I carried one of those cups. They were here last year on holidays. And he said, I carried one of those coffins up the aisle. I'll be there.
Wow.
And that's, he's amazing, coming back.
You know, there was only
50 when this happened, and he's 90 now.
Yeah.
You know, there's other bits and pieces. You know, there's other people that have come up to me and said, I hear you're doing something.
Mm.
And it's, Alma has sent out a list to the ex-pupils of the school. So it could also, this will also probably turn into a bit of a sixth class reunion from 1984 and 1986 as well. Because that was one of the things, like bridging would have been in the pantomimes and that with Sharon.
Yeah.
Alma would have been friendly with Joanne. Alma's sister made her confirmation along with Joanne. Anne Nichols would have known us.
See, everybody remembers Sharon and Joanne. Very few remember Kevin and Adrian.
Well, they hadn't had the chance, had they?
No.
They never got the chance to make their impressions.
No.
They did with you guys, of course.
Oh, absolutely.
About outside the home. Yeah. They didn't get that. And is it just people who turn up on it's 4 p.m., isn't it?
The Mass on the Saturday is at 4 p.m. in the cathedral.
Mm-hmm.
And it is open to everybody. There's no restrictions on anyone. I don't know how we're going to do it if too many people turn up.
First come, first served.
Yeah. And the Sunday is the same.
Okay.
I don't know if we're going to need to get TVs outside or
TVs outside. No, that's...
But,
sounds like a technical nightmare.
But okay. As I say, that's... And after the service and the cathedral on the Sunday, everybody's invited back also to the girls' school.
Yeah,
okay.
On the Sunday.
All right, okay. So that's something that's... Angela, you'll mark it in your own way. I'm sure you are. This is for you, it's a constant journey. Do anniversaries come and go for you, or is this significant, or do you just do things your way? Not taking anything away from this wonderful event. I'm just saying, on a personal level.
When I spoke about Bishop Hegarty before, when Bishop Hegarty was alive, we always had, when he was alive and living in Letterkenny, we always had their anniversary mass in the house.
I get you, yeah.
And then when Bishop Hegarty moved to Derry, we always had the anniversary mass in his house.
Okay.
In Derry.
That was a real connection you formed there, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Unbelievable. So that would have been a big loss to you,
too. Yeah, it was Bishop Hegarty's death. Yeah. It was a terrible loss.
Mm, okay. Angela 90. Most people know you as Angela 90. Where's the 90 from?
From Joe.
Joe 90.
Even when I was in the hospital having the youngsters, the girls used to come out, "Would you like a cup of tea, Mrs. 90? Thank you very much. That'd be lovely.
Love it. That's fantastic.
I was always known as Angela 90.
And is that where we Joe's name come from?
Yeah, then? Joe 45. Well, it was...
Joe 45. I love it because it was
Dr. McCauley christened him that one, or christened him that when he was born. He says, "You've got a 45.
Oh, wow. That's fantastic, isn't it?
So I have such great memories of the kids, you know, even the two little ones. They were so funny. Like if anybody came into the house and gave Adrian, whether it was a shilling or a sixpence or no matter what, he went to Ruth's chemist at the bottom of the road, crossing two roads, to buy a dotty. And he had a dotty always in each hand and one in his mouth. But no matter who came into the house and gave him money,
that's where he was going,
down to Ruth's chemist to get a dotty.
But I suppose too as well, not just that story, but generally, when you're in a big family, you have to make a bit of a rattle or else you get forgotten very quickly, don't you? There's a lot of yous. Okay.
Well, there were such, Sharon was a character. Joanne was a lady.
Yeah.
She was the lady of the house. And Joe used to say, "Well, it'd be a poor house, couldn't keep one lady." But Sharon always had a child on her hip.
Yeah.
She carried the boys about. Joanne was always sitting reading out of a book. She was... But I could have went away for a week and left Sharon in charge at 14.
Mm.
Like when the time my mother died and they were up in Tommy Keyes and Brady's house, and Sharon always made the Sunday dinner when Joe and myself went to Mass.
Yeah.
And she made the Sunday dinner at 14.
Brilliant.
And she was up in Tommy Keys's when my mother died, with the two wee ones, and she was making the dinner for Thomas and Bridie on the Sunday, and whatever she put into the gravy. Thomas said to her, I don't like them herbs in the gravy. Well, if they're good enough for Joe 90, they're good enough for you. Now, you know, she was a, she had a, she just, whatever she thought, she said it.
Yeah.
She was like an open book. She didn't hide.
Just remembering, obviously, Sharon, Joanne, Adrian, Kevin and Noreen as well. Yeah, thanks so much for calling in and helping us remember them with you.
Yeah.
And the very best of luck with the 40th anniversary. I have a sense that you've put an awful lot into this, Philip, and I've no doubt it's going to be really, really important. And it's good to do because you can't go back and do it. You have one go at the 40th, and if you're doing it, you're doing it. And it's good.
And
Father John Joe Duffy.
Duffy is saying the Mass. Father John Joe will be related to Joe, and he's saying the Mass on Sunday, which is important to mention that.
That's significant.
Yeah.
Never's wanting to either with his time.
Yeah.
And just to mention, Sunday the 26th of April 2026, you might be listening to this long after this event has taken place, but it's the 40th anniversary musical tribute in St. Eunan's Cathedral at 3 p.m. It's not 3 p.m. The Mass is at 4 p.m.
Yeah, the concert's at 3. The Mass is at 4 on the Saturday.
Very good. Okay, excellent. Philip, lovely to speak to you again. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Great,
and Angela, lovely to chat to you as well.
Yeah,
and
thank you.
Inspirational too. And I just think it's really very insightful. Some of the stuff you said is very insightful. I think particularly about the wake and how long you leave it before you have a funeral.
Yeah.
That's a real experience.
Especially for a child.
Yes.
I think you have to get time to just feel that they're not going to be there anymore. You know, like we really went from making dinner for 10 down to 4 people.
And if you count Friday to Tuesday, it's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah. You know,
if you were to look at it like that, from comic relief to
Mum still cooks dinner for 16 every day.
Yeah. But who's doing the heavy lifting though?
Well, I don't know who's coming in. You never know who's coming into my house.
But that's the house, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's still an open door
for everybody.
There's always a kettle very close to boil.
There's always a kettle on the boil.
Yeah, right.
It doesn't matter if you're a stranger. It doesn't matter.
I don't think it would. Okay. Listen, thank you so
not at all.
Very
Greg,
much.
Thank
I
you
really
very
appreciate
much.
All of your time.
Thanks, Greg.
Thanks very much, Greg.
And a big thank you once again to Angela 90 and Philip. Well, that was this week's podcast. I hope you did enjoy it. Don't forget we release new episodes every Friday morning for you from 11 a.m. If you enjoyed it, please feel free to like and subscribe if you're listening to us on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And don't forget to tell your friends as well. The more people we reach, the better. And, of course, check out the back catalogue with some other amazing stories from truly remarkable people. If you have any feedback, any comments, or even if you wish to suggest a guest, feel free to contact the researcher and producer of this podcast. That's Caroline Orr. And you can email her, CarolineOrr@HighlandRadio.com, or email me directly to GregHughes@HighlandRadio.com with any feedback. Again, thank you so very much for listening. Check us out next week from 11 a.m. on Friday. But until then,